What's up? It is time for Say Hey, Chico's only locally produced sports talk radio show. I'm your host, Jerome Gilbert. Alongside me, filling in for Jake, a whole cast of characters. You're very familiar with this guy, Jonathan Newberry.
How's it going?
What's happening, brother?
I'm feeling good.
Jaime's paying us a visit once more. Jaime, hello.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
And then my partner in crime, Mr. Derek Isamaki.
What's good? How you doing?
I'm great, brother. Thank you.
Yeah,
we've almost made it right through now. Monday, and OKC, Golden
State.
My
money's getting started right now.
Okay, so let's handle that underwriting.
Right,
we'll jump into the show.
Obviously, we want to pay tribute to the people who keep us functioning. Say Hey is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Buffalo Wild Wings, featuring 36 beers on tap, wall-to-wall HD TVs with nonstop wings, sports, and more. At 801 East Avenue, open every day from 11 a.m. till midnight and beyond. More information at buffalowildwings.com. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer,
sports. Yes. All right. So Naturally. Thanks to Buffalo Wild Wings. So, boys, we're in the midst of the NBA playoffs, so we'll definitely get to some OKC, Golden State talk, Cavs in Toronto. But first, let's start with the strongest jaw in all of the major leagues. Joey Bats, a.k.a. Jose Bautista, took a mean right hook from Texas Rangers second baseman Odor this weekend. Did you guys all see that?
I saw it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was a clean hit.
It was a great hit. That's why I said he has the strongest jaw in the league, man. That guy. Wow. So it became a meme really quick. It blew up all over my timeline on Instagram and Twitter. And I don't know. There's a few ways we could go about it. We could talk about the incident itself. I guess a little history. So Joey Bats, again, best nickname in baseball, if you ask me. Basically, this all stems from last year in the playoffs. Joey Bats, after hitting an absolute moonshot to effectively end the Rangers season, right? I believe it was game six or game seven. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think it was bottom of the eighth of game five of the ALDS.
Oh, game five, yeah.
And so the Rangers had one more at bat. Or maybe it was in extras. I don't know. That was it was a crazy game where the Rangers had three errors in one inning, all by Elvis Andrews,
right,
I believe.
That's right, yeah.
And because the Rangers had Toronto on the ropes. And Toronto was pretty much a heavy favorite to win that series and to win the AL, even with Kansas City over there on the other side. But it was just a very emotional game. And, you know, Joey Bautista is a very emotional guy.
Yep.
And not only did he flip the bat very emphatically, probably the biggest ones of the season, right towards the Rangers dugout, but then he also stared down the pitcher right after he did it.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of guys in the Rangers didn't like that. You know, and this is the last time they played this year in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
Only seven games between those two this year. And, Rougned Odor took it. You know, but the thing was that Bautista had come in. His slide was pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I hear a lot of people talking about it. They say it wasn't a baseball play. You know, he could have hurt the second baseman who's getting like $15 million this year.
He's throwing his ball in the first baseman too. Like he tries to throw the ball at Joey.
Yeah. No, the Rangers hate him. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. And honestly, I've watched a lot of baseball brawls over the years, and you never really see a clean punch. Usually the guy runs out of the pitcher.
It's all just like
the catcher always catches him first, and all of a sudden everybody's in the field, they're talking smack, but you never really see anybody really get leveled except for when Nolan Ryan one time got a guy in a headlock and punched him like five times in the face. But so, I mean, I'm not like, you know, I'm not pro-violence necessarily, but I got to admit, if I was on the Rangers, I'd be very happy with my second baseman right now.
Yeah, I mean, that was a clean punch. They actually had a...
It actually landed, yeah. Knocked his helmet off. It was great.
Yeah, the fact that he like missed the ear flap, too, was perfect.
Yeah, right. It was perfect.
That was a perfect spot for him.
He couldn't have landed it better.
No, it was right on the money.
And Joey Bats, he wobbled, but he stayed on his feet.
He did. Yeah.
And you connect like that, I'm telling you this much. I'm going down.
Even if I'm not down, I'm still going to just like, all right, I'm just going down right now. I just got hit in the face. I'm going to crawl away for a second because something went seriously wrong.
I just think baseball, it's one of those sports, man. It has all these unwritten rules, and you can't like show up the other team without expecting retaliation. And I think it's all kind of comical myself because a guy flipped his bat. I mean, yeah, it's not maybe the most sportsman-like thing to do, but you're all multimillionaires, professional athletes. You get paid millions of dollars to do this. And Joey Bat's biggest moment as far as on the plate in his life, he came up huge. And that's a feeling I don't think I can really relate to. I know I've done really well on some finals and thrown the paper at my teacher and just put my hands up and just backed away. But
pencil drop.
Right. Yeah. But I've never been at the height of my profession and had a moment like that. So it's hard. It's hard to... I don't know. I don't think I'd be able to contain myself. And I just think it's kind of ridiculous that we ask these athletes to handle all this with decorum and class. Like, I like my athletes being professional athletes.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, when you think about Joe Carter in the World Series, bigger moment, just threw the bat down.
Yeah.
You know, you think about, you know, what was it, Kirk Gibson? You probably remember that one in 88.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, he's fist pumping around the bases. But, you know, That was pretty reserved, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Where does, like, it's a gray area. Where does that cross the line? When does it become too excessive and stuff? Right. And I think, like, yeah, definitely, sure, he antagonized them. That's what he was really trying to do.
He did.
I think there are certainly ways to celebrate without having to go directly at him. I'm sure if you want to do a bat flip, like, oh my gosh, and just, like, look at your team, like, look what we just happened. I think that's one thing. I'd be totally fine with that.
Right.
Like, the whole idea of, like, a massive bat flip, I think that's a little too excessive on their behalf.
On the topic of celebrations... we might see some of that tonight. What if the way those things were handled in baseball were similar to that in NBA? You know, Stephen Curry and the bench, they celebrate and they're getting up and down. What if that was allowed in the NBA? It would be, you wouldn't see that. If, you know, oh, you're celebrating a three that hasn't gone down yet. The bench is clear. Yeah. You know, that'd be wild if you saw that in the NBA.
Slash awesome. I love that stuff. Personally, I know I might be on an island here, but I love the extracurriculars. I love when players talk trash.
I do too.
I don't know. It just adds, again, sports for me, it's just entertainment. And you and I just had this conversation, Derek, where we kind of identify in some senses too strongly with our sports and take them too serious when at the end of the day, it's just a silly game.
Just a game.
Yeah, but I absolutely love the flair. I love the trash talking. I love all that stuff.
You said flair. I grew up a pro wrestling fan. Of course I love it. Ric Flair.
Yeah.
You want to see all that. I love it.
I think there's a big difference, though, in the culture of basketball and baseball because baseball is an older game.
Mm-hmm.
And also just basketball in general. Like, I remember playing hoops as a kid. Like, that's what you did. You talk trash.
Yeah.
That was part of the game. That was like an integral. It was almost like if you're not talking trash, it's like, what are you doing? So when somebody throws their hands up before they've even hit a three or leave it up in the air like that, you know, it's like, it's just kind of, that's part of the culture. So whereas like before, I mean, it was an interesting debate last year too, when they started talking about, is this more of like a thing that the Latin players do versus like the older white guys who don't like it? And is this a case of get off my lawn, you know? And I think the game is changing, you know what I mean? You're seeing a lot more exuberance and stuff, but getting back to what you're talking about, unwritten rules, I think it's interesting that Matt Bush, who actually spent 3 years in jail from a DUI, gets called up as a 30-year-old rookie, and in his second appearance, you know, throws at him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So was it one of those things where he needed to be told? Did he get a look from the manager? Did he get a look from Prince Fielder, like, hey, this is what your time? Because he wasn't on the team last year.
Right.
Like, I want to know, did he just know enough about baseball and baseball culture to just know that this was his time to plunk him?
Yeah, the irony does not escape me that he just got out of prison and his last name's Bush.
Right. It is the wrong... We should have had another Bush go to prison, but that's another story altogether.
I don't know. I thought the whole thing was highly entertaining. This is the first time since we've taken over for Jake in his absence that we've started the show with baseball. And to be honest, to capture the younger audience, you need the flair, I think. I don't think kids... Especially these days with social media and the instant gratification of watching a 2-minute YouTube video and all that kind of stuff, I don't think kids have the patience to sit around and watch 9 innings of baseball. However, if you add some of this stuff in these storylines, I think it makes it a little more palpable for the younger audience. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, you know, I think baseball is always really frowned upon it, and that's that's disappointing, because you look at someone like Yasiel Puig, who actually does a lot of that. He's very flashy, but a lot of major league baseball, they don't really like that. And there might be we might need some changes in baseball, as far as, you know, it's everyone has a short term memory. It's all about the highlights right then and now. People might forget this whole incident next week, you know. Right away.
Rangers and Blue Jays aren't forgetting this.
No.
Yeah. That's the thing. In baseball in particular, like, grudges are held forever.
They are.
I mean, just the thing. Like, this happened last year, this incident that they're still continuing over and stuff. And it's that – it hits them that deep. Like, they're very sensitive baseball players. They really are, more so, I feel, than any other sport out there. They really take so many things personally there. And I think that's something that – I mean, not to say to lighten up, because I understand it's a long and grinding process. You kind of have to take it seriously to, you know, get yourself in that mindset all the time. But definitely, I think there has to be some give and take at this point in time. I'm not saying go all out and, hey, let's go nuts and crazy every single time anything minute happens. But there's a way to do it in a professional environment, I feel. And they need to find that ground. They haven't yet.
And when you do, you know, exhibit some retribution, you got to just plunk him on his butt.
Yep.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Don't go headhunting. Don't throw behind the guy. You know what I mean? And honestly, the bat flipping thing, I don't know if that really deserved what happened yesterday. But like, when you have plays like at second base with Chase Utley last year.
Yeah.
That was a big one.
Took a guy out of the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
And then you have an incident like yesterday, too, which was involved where, you know, honestly, Bautista's slide was incredibly late.
Yep.
I mean, he could have hurt him bad. And so I think that really, I don't know if Odor would have thrown a punch if it had just been about the bat flip. But you had the bat flip, the animosity that was already there.
Yeah.
And then you try and take a guy out, maybe even hurt him or take him out for the year. You know, tempers are going to flare. And I honestly, if I was the manager or a teammate of Odor, I would not only not have a problem with it, I'd be buying him a steak dinner right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, speaking of flair and excitement, we have a hell of a series. What is lining up to be a hell of a series, kicking off in about 15 minutes as Oklahoma City and Golden State face off. And
I think we went 4-for-4 on Spurs predictions last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
0-for-4, that is.
We crushed it.
I was going to say, we were talking so much about how we wanted to see Golden State and San Antonio play, and we all thought it was set in stone. And here, now we're talking super excited about Golden State and the Thunder.
And
now.
I went against one of my golden rules when it comes to viewing sports, especially in the NBA. You have to take every game in a series as its own living, breathing organism.
Right.
And because it doesn't carry over. I don't believe really in momentum in the playoffs. I mean, how does momentum work? Do you bottle it up? Like, I just don't. I mean, I think there is a confidence thing there and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, that after that first game, the three of us were all on here, say, OKC, Spurs, we're all saying, yeah, it looks like it's over.
Right.
Kind of forgetting that, oh, yeah, OKC has two of the best five players in
absolutely,
the league.
Absolutely.
And not an exact shocker that they came back and won the way they did. I think the surprising thing was just simply that they got blown out the way they did and they responded the way they did.
Well, to win two games on the road, too, where San Antonio only dropped one home game all year during the regular season and then won their first two against Memphis in the first round, they just looked undefeatable at home. And so, you know, it took a Herculean effort by those guys, but you're right that every series is in its own vacuum.
Right.
Just like every NFL playoff game is its own thing.
Yeah.
And you can't necessarily say that it's going to carry over.
Yeah.
I think also give a lot of credit to OKC, the way that they did play the Spurs, too.
No
because
doubt.
I mean, that Spurs was a fine oiled machine right there throughout the entire regular season leading
sure
up to
was.
That 67 that series.
Wins.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I mean, they would be the talk of the town if it were not for the Warriors.
That was the best regular season they've had for a team that's won five championships.
Yeah. Exactly. And the way the Thunder were able to respond after that first game and then take them out of their way they run basketball. They completely disrupted that. Mm-hmm. They found a lineup that worked for them. Getting the two bigs down there. You have Inez Kanter and you have Steven Adams.
And these
they're looking like beasts right now. And if they can keep the rebounds alive and you give second chance points to Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, they're going to take advantage of them.
For sure.
I know a lot of people wanted to see Spurs versus the Warriors. But I think we're in for a real treat.
Yes.
I think this is like Shaq and Penny versus Jordan's Bulls, okay? I think we're going to look back on this culturally as fans of the sport, and you're going to be like, wow, this was a two – it's a big prize fight here. we have on our hands.
I would think I tweeted out 2 years ago, please let these two teams meet in the conference finals, just because their style of play is the pace is up and down. Pace, right? Both teams, I believe Golden State has been number one in the league the last 2 years, and OKC has been number three and number four the last 2 years. And when was the last time we saw a series with this type of star power? I'm talking about, you have the best shooter of all time, in my opinion. You have the most explosive point guard of all time, in my opinion. And then you have the freak that is Kevin Durant, a 7-footer who strokes the ball like Dirk Nowitzki, but then has handle, gets to the rim, and even has worked on his post-up game. And still not great at it, but just, it's unbelievable. And I think this series is going to be one for the ages. Not to mention, when KD and Russell Westbrook have both been healthy, these games for the past 3 years now have all been epic games for the most part. They've all been close. Granted, Golden State had a couple double-digit wins, but if you watch those games this season, all of the games were really tight going into the fourth quarter.
And OKC had a lead in the fourth quarter in all those games.
All the games, yeah.
You know, including a couple big leads, I think, once at home, and then there's the one overtime game. I mean, yeah, they're 0-3 against Golden State, but I wouldn't just automatically, you know, give Golden State a pass on this
one. No.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a great series.
Yeah, it's going to be a great series. This is the fourth conference finals for OKC in the last 6 years. They did get to the finals a couple years ago against LeBron's Heat, and obviously we're a little too underexperienced, I think, at that point. But,
sure.
You know, this is going to be really interesting because, I mean, not to bring Vegas into this too much, but against the Spurs, they were more of an underdog than they are against Golden State, which is interesting to me.
No, that's crazy, actually.
It is.
I think a lot of people are kind of realizing, I think we were undermining them a little bit in that Spurs series.
Perhaps.
Definitely. We all did. I mean, we all picked them to lose, obviously.
Yeah. So they're finally both healthy, too, between Durant and Westbrook.
Yeah.
We haven't seen them both healthy in the postseason in like 3 years.
And also seen the supporting cast around them, actually, that's actually producing.
Right.
That's really the big thing.
Deion
right
Waiters is getting good minutes. That's when you know you're clicking on all cylinders.
Backup point guard minutes.
Yeah, when Deion Waiters is beginning to figure it out. And I actually think that's going to be an interesting matchup, because I think it's going to be Deion Waiters on Klay Thompson a lot, and Deion Waiters is a legit 220 pounds. I think he's only 6'4, 6'3, 6'4, but he's a thick dude. And what you'll see often is when they switch the smaller guys on Clay, he'll just go down to the block, call for it, back him down a little bit, turn around jumper. He's going to have a harder time just getting his way with Deion Waiters. I can't believe I'm saying Deion Waiters is going to be a factor, but I think it's going to be interesting. There is no To me, there is no one matchup you look at and you say, oh, definite advantage. Across the board, I think it's pretty evenly matched. The Warriors go deeper, but that doesn't necessarily mean all that much in the playoffs because your rotations tighten up so much. You know, no one's going more than 8 deep into their bench anyway. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I think Festus Ezeli is going to get a lot of burn because Bogues is coming off the injury and he just isn't as fast, and they need someone who could get up and down the court. So I don't know. Predictions for this series, maybe not so much who's going to win, but just things you guys are looking for. Noobs, I'll start with you.
Just to see if Westbrook can, you know, play within himself and not turn the ball over too much. That's kind of his biggest Achilles heel, and getting a little reckless with the shot selection. I think, you know, if he can, you know, kind of, you know, have a high shooting percentage, you know, if he's going like 11 for 30 from the field, they're not going to win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like just a couple more of those jumpers to get down and get to the line, I think they have a shot. I mean, I don't know. It just depends. Like Golden State is, you know, almost unbeatable at home. I think they lost to the Celtics one game all year. You know what I mean?
Timberwolves as well, right?
Yeah, they lost to the Timberwolves
as well.
At home?
Yeah, at home. Yeah.
Okay, they dropped two. Okay, so I'm mistaken. But even so, you're looking at 39-2. You know, OKC is going to have to get one on the road to do it.
Yeah, they are. So, be interesting to see.
I mean, the playoffs is a different animal too. So you obviously it's
right.
I mean,
that's
the window
that has now become one of the hardest places to play in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
After everyone was talking about San Antonio, Noobs, you hit on it. I mean, they lost one all season and then dropped two against OKC, and that home crowd wasn't the advantage that.
Right.
We thought it was all season. So, Jaime?
Yeah, I am excited to see what both teams unite. This is a big-time matchup. Like I said earlier, I love Steven Adams. I know he's an irritant, but he's one of those guys, like Draymond, you hate him when he's on the opposing team. You love him when he's on your team. He's a 7-footer. He plays like he's 6'8". He's he always gets, you know, those loose rebounds. He's always there. He's always there. Thunder, they're big. They're a big team. I want to see how both teams decide to match up with each other.
Yeah.
Because the Thunder have Serge Ibaka. They basically have 3 7-footers in their starting lineup when you think about it.
Which I don't think will help them ultimately. But back to Steven Adams, anyone who rocks a single gold tooth and looks like the real-life incarnation of Captain Morgan, I'm all about. I love that guy.
Man.
He's a classic-looking figure. But honestly, the thing I think that is a key for OKC when I was looking at it is Serge Ibaka. You mentioned him. But because he is the most versatile big guy they have in the terms of his ability to protect the rim and drain a three-point shot. So they can almost still kind of run the floor, get that Golden State style of play about them, but still have the protection that they really need at the rim. Because Steven Adams has, if you're trying to do, I think, Steven Adams and Ynez Kanter, and they try running and gunning that entire time, they're going to tire themselves out, and they're not going to be able to stick with it. Granted, the rebounding might go up, and that's, I think, going to be a big issue if they do try to go big on them, if they can't keep up, and if they do, how is it going to affect the rebounding for the Warriors?
Yeah, I think OKC is the number one team in the playoffs on the board so far, I believe. I would have to double check that. Of course, I don't have the stats in front of me whenever I need them.
But our stat guy when we need it, right?
Seriously, we need a stat guy.
Come on. When your point guard averages nearly, 8 rebounds a game, I wouldn't bet against it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just think I agree. I think it's going to be very interesting, Derek, to see how Ibaka fits into the series, because he has been stretching the floor a little bit more, shooting the three a bit, but that's not his strength.
Yeah, he has to hit those. He has to hit the three for them to really have that chance to keep him on the floor. Because if he's not hitting the three, then it's just kind of a waste of plays, and he's just trying to protect the rim right now.
And it's just going to be interesting to see how much OKC, like you said, Noobs, I think it's going to be interesting to see if Westbrook gets lured into playing that style of basketball, because you know Curry's going to be jacking him up, and so are the rest of the Warriors. And at that pace, you saw the Blazers do this a lot, and the Blazers played it really well, where they're getting up and down the floor and jacking up threes that in previous years are terrible shots. But now with the new math and the way we value the three-pointer, it doesn't seem all that outlandish anymore. And I think for me personally, I'm just so excited to watch greatness. I think just the way these teams match up, they have contrasting styles. OKC doesn't move the ball like the Spurs or like the Warriors, but they have two of the top five players in the league. And to see those guys going back and forth against a team like the Warriors that are so well-rounded and can hurt you from so many different spots on the floor, I think it's going to be one for the ages, I hope. I wouldn't mind a 4-game sweep, but I don't see that happening.
I don't see that happening either. I think it's going at least 6 games.
Yeah, I agree.
The one thing I would say about the Warriors' style of play, though, is it might actually feed into OKC a little bit, because if they're not knocking down those threes, three-pointers tend to bounce off long rebounds.
Yep.
And if they get out in transition and Westbrook's already halfway down the floor and you get him the ball and he's in a one-on-one situation or even a two-on-one, they're going to get to the rim a lot, which means they're going to get to the line a lot.
Yep.
And if that's the case, then I think that could be a really dangerous situation. And it's rare, but you see those times where Klay and Steph go like 3-for-20. And if that happens, they're going to be in trouble. They've got to knock down those shots, which, you know, typically they do. But if they go cold for a couple games, it could be bad.
Yeah, I mean, the Warriors should win this based on, the team we've seen all regular season and based on just the way their style of play. The reason I say they should win it is because they have more players that can contribute than OKC does. However, it throws off the math when you have two aliens on your team in Westbrook and Durant. I mean, these guys just aren't from this planet. The way they're built, the way they play, I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but I'm excited.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great. I mean, you can pretty much toss the 73 wins out the window.
Yeah, it doesn't matter anymore.
It really doesn't matter. You know, I think the winner of this series is going to win it all.
Yep.
I mean, Cleveland's playing fantastic. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, man.
And Toronto, good for them. First conference finals in their franchise history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're an incredible underdog. plus 700 just for the series against Cleveland, which I don't really understand because they finished one game behind him in the East. And
they gave
him
a lot
of
trouble in
they
the regular season. Yeah,
I think it's a great matchup.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry plays really well against them. So he's if he can get back to that form, yeah, I think they can take a couple games.
And winning this game in Game 7 kind of got that monkey off their back a little bit as far as their playoff stigma. So I think that that's a series. Obviously, we haven't touched on it too much, but that could be a really interesting one as well.
Well, perfect transition, noobs. Let's touch on it now. They play tomorrow night, I believe, 5:30. And I think Cleveland should win, obviously, based on the way they played. But I think a lot of people are sleeping on Toronto. I do think Cleveland will win in 5 or 6. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see Toronto split the first two games in Cleveland. It wouldn't shock me. The thing that would shock me is if they come out tomorrow night after only having, you know, what, 30, I think it's going to be 30-something hours off, having to fly to Cleveland and then turn around and play. And Cleveland's just been sitting around for the last week or so.
That's always the thing, too. Like, that's always the thing. Do you want to rest or do you want to keep in shape and keep it going right there? It's always a debate that they have, and you see it work in favor both and against them, you know? So it'll be interesting to see how Cleveland responds, having, like I said, they've only played 8 games in a month. That's a lot of time. You're sitting there down for a while.
Because a normal NBA month, you're playing like 14, 15 games.
Right.
You know, but obviously after the Detroit sweep, it didn't hurt them. They had a bunch of time off between Atlanta. They have about at the same time over a week. Mm-hmm. They just kind of have that playoff pedigree where it's not going to really bother them, I don't think. Toronto still might be flying a little high after that win. We'll see how focused they are tomorrow night. But yeah, as far as rust, I don't think that's going to be a problem for Cleveland.
No, I'm really enjoying what's happening in Toronto right now. It's actually, they have the fans outside and they call it Jurassic Park. Yep. You know, you got Drake running up and down the sidelines, giving high fives, you know. It's fun right now. Toronto's fun right now. And I'm glad they're actually in this position because it just adds another dynamic to this great situation going on in the NBA playoffs.
There's something to be said about a team, or I guess I should say fans of a team who haven't been there before, you know, or it's been a long time. I remember the 06 Warriors and the whole We Believe Warriors, and I remember Oracle Arena selling out for their away games to pack the arena to watch the games in Dallas, and I think there's something so cool about being the underdog with nothing to lose. Now, obviously, the Warriors are on the complete opposite end of the spectrum where it's just expected that they move on and they win a championship.
But it's only been like that for like 2 years.
Right. And it
changes quickly. Even a year. I mean, this isn't like the 96 Bulls we're talking about.
Right.
It's already got 3 under their belt. I mean, this is still a relatively new thing. You know what I mean? So I don't think we've quite got to the point where the fans are, there's not like a malaise or there's not like an expectancy.
Yeah,
I think.
It's not like the 90s Yankees fans.
Right,
you know,
where it's like yawn. Yeah.
Okay, wake me up when we're in the
right
World
or like Alabama football fans right now.
Yeah. Right.
It's like they just be like, you know, kind of like almost like a disinterest or UConn women's basketball.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I'm from Connecticut. I was always rooted for UConn, but it's like, man, come on. Like, can one other school recruit 5 girls that can hang with these girls? I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's crazy,
you know.
Yeah,
so I mean, we always like to see things get shooken up. You know what I mean? But I don't think we've gotten to that point with Golden State yet where I don't think collectively the nation's tired of them.
No, we still like
the nation
them,
the nation collectively is tired of the Patriots, tired of the Yankees, even tired of the Red Sox, and getting tired of the Giants, I might add, I would think.
Oh, yeah.
I can't speak for 300 million
people.
Them
for a long
You've been
time.
Tired
yeah.
of them for
Since
a long
I've been
time.
Born, I've been tired of them.
So, but you know what I mean? Because there's all these fans that kind of like when the playoffs start, you know, you kind of just like get behind a team.
Yeah.
And the Giants were a great story in 2010, 2012, great story, even 2 years ago. But now it's like now you've kind of reached that status where like the casual fan who rooted for you before when you were an underdog,
right.
Now you're not an underdog. They don't care about you. In fact, now not only do they not care, there's vitriol.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, when we've mentioned it before, it's only a matter of time before it turns on the Warriors because they are the most arrogant team I've seen in years. I mean, seriously.
He gets away with it. He's got a baby face.
Yeah, I mean,
and so does Draymond.
Curry's just adorable. So no one cares.
Yeah, they're cocky, but the thing is, they're cocky on the court. When they go outside, they're much more collectively. They have a humbleness about them when they're off the court. When they're on the court, they're totally animals. I feel.
And minus Draymond Green.
Fine. Draymond's a little bit. Yeah, he's the outspoken one. No, most definitely. And every team needs a guy like that.
Yeah,
he's the bravado for them. He's the one that talks. You know.
But to your point, they do tend to say the right things off the court, in the press conferences, after the game, paying respect to the opponents. So you're right. they do, I guess, make up for it there. But on the court, man, Steph Curry running down the court before the ball's gone. And he's not the only one. Klay's done that. Bogut almost blocked Steph's shot doing it earlier in the season. So
yes,
I think it's only a matter of time. But I'm definitely enjoying it. And I cannot wait to get out of here and go watch this game tonight.
Oh, yeah. So